Past year or so, I've been reading a book called Countdown, Our Last Best Hope for a Future on Earth by Alan Weisman. Books like this always seem to take me a long time to read. Now, while it's over 500 pages, I still do hate to admit that it's taken me this long and I'm still not done. I pick it up, read a chapter or a few, get heartbroken, angry, or disturbed, and have to put it down for a while. This one in particular goes into the depths of expanding on his first book, What the World Would Look Like Without Us, Me and You, All of Us Humans, into a countdown, in a sense, how much more time we have. The countdown is on. Chapter by chapter, it picks a particular part of the world or a particular culture. It discusses the exponential growth that we've had since the Industrial Revolution, and the effect that has on the surrounding land and nature, plant and animal life, the landscape, even the effect on the people. Some who, as a result, don't have enough food to feed all the crying mouths, or enough water to sustain the community. It also goes into the effect on the larger community and country that these people reside in. It breaks it down in such incredible ways, talking about negatives and positives, things that have been done to improve situations and things that have been undone. But in the end, you get this eerie feeling that if nothing is done, there will soon be a world with too many people for us to sustain. And this might, in fact, do us all in. That if we can't figure out how to live within our means, within our limits, soon those limits and boundaries will come for us. Whether it be that there isn't enough food to eat, there isn't enough clean water to drink, whether the earth heats up so rapidly or a new disease comes through and wipes us all out. But what's interesting is that the author also makes a point to explain how the world might actually just go on just fine without us. That various animal communities would rebound, others would adapt and evolve for drier or wetter conditions. Certainly many like us would be lost in the process, but ultimately Earth would remain. Barring any form of giant asteroid, life would go on without us. In some ways better than when we were present. He shows this with how parts of Africa have had to have significant changes. He names how Uganda started family planning education. Now, some of it was related to various diseases, and others just because there weren't enough mouths to feed. There were more mouths to feed than food available, with poor families struggling to feed children of 8 or more. When there wasn't enough food, it forced various communities further and further up the mountain ranges, clear cutting for farmland. And unfortunately, this changed the water flow for the farms below, along with encroaching heavily on local guerrilla colonies. Not just taking their land, but passing along various diseases as the guerrillas lived closer and closer and had closer contact with humans than they'd ever done so before. Yet after the education came into play and people began taking different safety measures and began family planning, made it so there were fewer mouths to feed, that families could sustain themselves better, and that less diseases were being spread to the guerrilla colonies. The farmers began coming back down the mountainside as they didn't need to clear cut and they didn't need as much land. Once trees and vegetation grew up again, it helped change the water flow back into the community to sustain the original farms that were there in the first place. This also greatly affected the health of the various guerrilla colonies in huge and powerful ways. With less diseases, they eventually got protected lands. The colonies began to grow again rather than dwindle. And this shows that what we do has huge impacts on the environment and creatures around us, whether we realize it or not. Yet for so often as Christians, we haven't seen any of this, of what we do, as a problem. We've interpreted the Genesis text, the first one, in such a way that we have dominion, that we rule over everything, so we can do whatever we want with it, forgetting how God called it good and very good, forgetting that in just the next chapter over the second account of creation, God's command isn't to have dominion, but to keep it and till the earth, in a sense to care for it. Perhaps in a similar way that God cares for all the earth, loves us and cares for us in creation. And God loves us so much that when God saw that we kept getting it wrong over and over again, God sent prophet after prophet after prophet, finally sent Jesus to save us, to save the world, all of creation. So it's interesting that as Christians, we've taken these few verses out of context for so incredibly long, as if the laws in Exodus, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy don't also tell us how to care for the world around us, to care for our neighbor, to care for the stranger in our midst, the alien among us, the animals and the land. They all get a Sabbath rest and are to be cared for. The Psalms talk so much about how we as humanity are to join with creation, singing songs to our great Creator, praising God for all the goodness God has made and all the goodness God has done. But even if we miss all of this in the Old Testament, as Christians, sometimes we even miss Christ's words. You know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them, but it is not so among you. Whoever wishes to become great among you must be servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all, for the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, to give his life a ransom for many. Christ, this King, this Messiah, this Son of Man, Son of God, thought nothing about equality with God. As Paul writes, he humbled himself, taking the form of a slave. And here in the Gospel of Mark, Christ urges us to do the same, to be a servant. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. Perhaps giving us a glimpse of how we should be viewing this claim of dominion of the earth. For the reality is, our belief in having dominion over creation, it really doesn't stop there with plants and animals, rivers and trees. It oozes over to having dominion over each other, all of creation, including humanity. As Jesus states, the Gentile rulers lord it over them. Their great ones are tyrants over them. Jesus is stating the obvious of human life. Rulers lord it over, some become great tyrants, many wield power over others. The complete opposite of how Jesus calls his disciples, calls us to live. To not lord it over others, not become tyrants or wield power, but to become servants, slaves, to be a slave of all. Or as Paul puts it in his letter to the Philippians, do nothing from selfish, ambitious, or conceit, but in humility regard others as better than yourselves. Let each of you look not to your own interest, but to the interests of others. The interests of others, that includes making sure all have enough food to eat, proper shelter and water and clothing, some of which means we might need to have less for others to have some. It also means we care for creation in such a way that it helps care for and love our neighbors, others around the world, both near and far. Taking initiatives to help care for creation in such a way that helps combat perhaps the rising temperatures, which cause ice caps to melt, seawaters to rise, flooding island nations, some being flooded out of their ancestors' homes completely. Perhaps it means that this notion of dominion, lording it over others, also ties into how we care for creation, to keep it and till it, in a sense, perhaps even to serve it. To serve all creation, humanity and creature alike. To see all creation, including humanity, as God does. Biblical scholar Ellen Davis argues that how we see the world is how we learn to value it. It should come as no surprise, really, if we see the beauty in something, we tend to care for it and value it much more. If we see it or are taught to see something as less than or that we can use and abuse it, we won't value it very much at all. This can be said for how we view people and creation alike. How we see them is how we value them. Stating the obvious, yet she argues this isn't always the case for Christians. We don't always see the world as we should, and thus we don't really value it. We don't see the world, creation, including humanity, as God does. As God calls it good. For God says the creation is good. God formed the dry land, separating it from the waters and the seas, and called it good. God brought forth vegetation, all kinds of plants to fill the land, and called it good. God created two lights, one for the day, one for the night, and called them good. God brought forth living creatures, birds of the air, fish of the sea, every swarming creature, called it good, blessing them, telling them to be fruitful and multiply. God made everything that creeps on the ground, the cattle and wild animals of the earth, and called them good. And this word good in Hebrew is tov. While it can mean good, pleasant, agreeable, it can also mean beautiful. God calls the creation beautiful over and over again, including us as humans, blessing us as well as creatures to be fruitful and multiply. We are to see the world as God does, good and beautiful, blessed to be fruitful and multiply. With it, we are to follow the command to have dominion, to keep it, to till it, or as Ellen Davis suggests, to exercise skilled mastery among the creatures. We are to see the world as God does, because God so loves the world. So much so that Jesus was sent to show us the way, the truth, and the life, to save not just humanity, but all of creation, the whole world. Teaching us to love one another, to not regard anyone less than, but to treat them better than we treat ourselves, to not lord it over anyone or anything, but following after Christ, being a servant of all, including keeping and tilling the land, that all of creation, humanity and creature alike, may flourish together. As Alan Weisman argues, living within our means, striving for a harmony with each other, with creation. Perhaps the way we were called to live right from the start, in the beautiful and good garden of creation. In a few minutes, we'll be sharing communion together, breaking bread, pouring cup, these fruits of creation that help nourish and sustain us, that bring us into closer communion with Christ, that fill us up to be sent back out into the world, into creation, for Christ's service. At the table, all are invited. They'll come, as we say, from north and west, east and south, sinner and saint, all come together at the table, all undeserving of the grace poured out. We come to share this feast. Let these fruits of creation fill us in such a way that we go out into the world following after Christ, going out to serve and not to be served, becoming like the least of these, treating others better than we treat ourselves, keeping and tilling creation, caring for all of creation, humanity and creature alike, valuing and loving this beautiful and good creation like God does. Let us follow after Christ's example. Amen.